everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Heart to Heart Podcast. I'm Bria.
And I'm Kim.
And today we have another great episode for you. We're going to be getting into some things that have been on our minds, on our hearts, and also in the news. Mm-hmm. And this is going to kind of be a kitchen sink episode where we're just going to come at you with our feelings and things we've learned in the past few years.
Yeah, I'm super excited for this episode, and I think it's going to just encompass a lot of things that have been on our mind and really need to be put out into the world. So before we get started, as always, you can listen to us on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can make donations to us through Anchor. And thank you to everyone who has financially supported us. This definitely makes it easier for us to create content and keep going. So we are so, so grateful for your financial contributions.
We are so grateful. So let's get into it. What has been on our minds?
So I think what has really been front and center is the verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. And I think the main lesson to take away from this is do not be surprised when white supremacists go on trial for heinous crimes and are deemed not guilty. That is the major takeaway. I mean, white supremacy will always reign under the current structure of our system. That is what we've seen just throughout our entire college experience. I mean, there was the Kyle Rittenhouse shooting where he shot and killed two white protesters who were protesting the Jacob Blake shooting. We saw the murder of George Floyd. We saw the murder of Breonna Taylor. These were just really, really pivotal incidents that I think really had a large impact on our college experience. I mean, everything that was going on for Breonna Taylor, the cops getting off, like, I just remember, like, being in classes and, like, being in school when this has happened, and it was just very jarring. And definitely, I think, just impacted how so many Black people on campus, like, moved after that.
Yeah, and, like, Ahmaud Arbery, that's happening right now as well. It's kind of just, like, a lot going on. And also, I don't even know if this is just college, but, like, we could take it back to we could take it back to being 12 years old.
Trayvon Martin.
And seeing George Zimmerman get off.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was the day my heart really, really broke.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I feel like that was a lesson for the new generation to manage expectations. Because when I think back, I think of watching it with my parents. And, like, I remember saying to my dad, like, he's going to, like, we're going to get justice, right? And my dad, who was a lawyer, was like, honey, I was like, what do you mean? I remember getting mad at my dad being like, absolutely not. Like, why are you guys so jaded and cynical, whatever, whatever. And he was like, honey, I've been doing this. I'm a lawyer. The jury came back after, what, like 2 hours? He said, they're not going to find him guilty. I said, what do you mean? He was like, it was too quick. So that means they went into this saying he was not guilty. They're coming out of this saying he's not guilty. And what was the verdict?
Not guilty.
So from then on, I was shot in the heart and told to prepare for disappointment every time.
It was the modern day Emmett Till case for us.
Yeah.
Like, as an adolescent, literally still being children, like in our youth, having to grapple with that and understand what is at stake for your life because of the color of your skin. Like, that fundamentally shifted how I moved.
Yeah.
Like, there was this understanding that, okay, this is not, like,
it's not a joke.
Yeah.
It's
like how I operate and how I move is always going to be perceived different.
Yeah.
And at that time, I wasn't even considering the lens of gender and, like, how our identity also as women would also kind of have an impact and intersect with that. I think at the time, the forefront was race for me.
Mm-hmm.
But
it was our first awakening.
Yeah.
And it's something so evil, I think, about white supremacy, where it's like, white supremacy continuously is in your face reminding you are nothing to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that every single time we have one of these major cases, it's like, yeah, you can feel those things in little ways and microaggressions, whatever, but, like, these big cases are reminders, like strategic reminders from white supremacy to tell everyone, we do not value Black lives at all. Get it through your head.
In every single generation, for every single 5-10 years that we see these pivotal, you know, decisions, it also is setting a new precedent for that current generation of what the expectation is.
Yeah.
Right? So all these, you know, younger people who might grow up and have different racist sentiments and stuff like that, they're looking at Kyle Rittenhouse like, oh, bet I could get away with that too then.
Exactly.
So it's just very interesting to think about how it operates and the precedent that this sets. And obviously, you know, the Kyle Rittenhouse case, all this stuff is grounded on hundreds of years of systemic oppression and everything like that. But with every new case, it's a new precedent for like the most current generation or the most current people that are watching. And I think that is what's scary, because yeah, there's been no shift.
No, it just reinforces every generation. White supremacists have the right to be white supremacists, mm-hmm, and the right to be violent and to take lives.
Yeah. And I think also too, this is why I think a lot of people in the Black community, like, even though the guy who killed George Floyd was, you know, convicted and, you know, sent to prison, I think that's why there still was this air of, well, nothing's been solved. There is no structural change. And this is one micro step in a journey to fundamentally changing our criminal legal system.
And I also think, like, those moments where, yeah, we convicted the cop who killed George Floyd, like, they throw us a bone to appease, mm-hmm, us. I think also, like, Biden getting elected was throwing us a bone.
Yeah.
Like, because what, for both those events, what's changed?
And speaking of Joe Biden, do you want to mention his comments on the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict?
So our president, in reference to the verdict, he said the system works. He said the system works, everyone. So yeah, the system is working, because the system was created to oppress Black people.
Thank you.
And give violent white supremacists a get out of jail free card. So yeah, he was right. The system works. And yeah, obviously, you know, as president, you're not supposed to cast doubt on like rule of law and the legal system. But the fact that, like, oh my God, the fact that this is condoned, mm-hmm, it's deeper than that.
And there's no suggestions of, you know, okay, you like this.
Overhaul the legal system if he could get off. Yeah.
Right. Like, I just find that very jarring. And again, like, this is somebody who we rallied for, we fought for. And again, like, I don't think anyone went in with the expectation that, like, Joe Biden was going to be a racial justice warrior and savior. Like, nobody went in with that expectation. But again, I think it's just all these little reminders that, like, we're really fighting an uphill battle. Like, you know, it's just constant disappointment. And I think it's what I've learned too is how to kind of manage that disappointment and like when I need to
stop reading, stop watching.
Because I remember honestly, like, my first 3 years of Brown, like, super, super, super tapped in, always watching CNN, watching every article. If I was not doing analysis in the dining hall with my friends, I was doing analysis on the phone with my dad, like, you know what I'm saying, just about politics, about everything going on. And this year, I don't have it in me. Like, I can't do it, because literally to preserve my sanity and peace, I've had to literally scale back, because it takes everything out of you to constantly see your people getting killed.
Yeah.
It takes so much.
I don't know who I was talking to recently. This might have been Chandani or someone else, another close friend. This might have been you. I just don't know anymore. But someone was saying that, like, you know, when they were younger, high school age / beginning of college, it was so easy to be like an activist and like you're angry, mm-hmm, and you have all this energy and this passion. And I remember, like, they were talking to their dad and their dad was like, honey, you're going to burn out. Like,
give it up.
It's just impossible to keep this momentum and passion, and we're going to get a good verdict. And it's like, and that's coming from someone who's learned and seen it and lived it and done that, been there, done that. He was like, it's not sustainable. And this system, this world is out to break that spirit of yours. Mm. And at some point it might very well get broken. And she was like, yeah, it is now. She was like, I don't have the energy.
Yeah.
I don't have the energy.
Yeah. That I mean, I resonate with that completely. And I think also too, it's a matter of, like, I know to some degree and in some sect, you want to like pursue racial justice work in the future. Like that will be a component of whatever job we end up doing long term. And I think for me, it's also like, I need to save myself in some capacity now so I also have the energy for that later.
Do it later, yeah.
Right? Like, I think it's always going to kind of be like a give and take type of situation of knowing like when you can fully plug in and when you have the energy for all that and like when you don't. And I think especially as like Black people or people of color, like we have every single right to decide like when to tap out.
We do.
Because having to fight for your life every single day is not something that like I think should be expected of everybody. Like,
yeah.
That's just, I mean, that's not how everyone else is expected to operate through this world. So I don't think that that burden should be placed on us.
Yeah.
And obviously then, props to everybody who can do that work. Yeah. And like, that's so important. I'm not saying everyone needs to be tapped out at the same time, of course. But I think like equality is also Black people not having to like be expected to fight for their lives every single day.
Exactly. I agree with that. It's kind of about finding the balance, but I also feel like it's a double-edged sword because obviously you need to take time for yourself and you cannot be tapped in 24/7 because white people don't have to be tapped in 24/7. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Other people aren't expected to operate at the same level of racial awareness as we are. So if you want to take a break, take a break. But then the double-edged sword is that white supremacy wants you to take a break, kind of.
Yeah, definitely.
So that you don't do the work to fight against it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird. It's weird. It's like a break for your mental sanity. But I guess try not to lose hope.
Right.
Because that's what white supremacy wants from you.
Definitely.
If we're all dejected and all feeling burnt out and all feeling like nothing will ever change, nothing will ever change.
Yeah. I think it's very much like when people talk about like self-care and it's like sometimes like fully taking that step back is knowing that like you'll be able to be a better person later on. Like it's kind of one of those things. Like it's a temporary pullback, but like you still have the main goals and the main vision in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think that has never left for me. Like I'm still like, okay, like we know at the end of the day what we need to do. Like we know we need to tear down these systems. We know we need to fundamentally create change, but it's a matter of like when you could give your 100% or not. And just like being very real about that. And I think that is just very important. Especially as you're going through a crazy course load, when you have different social, family situations going on, like it's just so important to like strike that balance and like realize what that is for yourself.
Yeah, that was very well said. it's hard, but we're also so young. That's something I've learned. Maybe that's number two, but like that realization is something I have to keep holding on to because it's like after going through a lot and dealing with a lot, your spirit feels old.
It does.
But then you look and you're like, the vessel I'm in just turned 21. Like, I'm a baby.
Yeah.
In the scope of the universe and millions and billions of years old things, I'm 21. Like, why do I think I'm so old and burnt out and tired and haggard? It's like, no, I'm young. I need to keep reminding myself that. And that goes for like things I feel like I haven't learned yet or things I feel like I haven't mastered yet. It's like, I still have time to master those things and it's not over for me. And it's not over for you or anyone listening.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Such a beautiful piece of inspiration. Do we want to get into our second lesson?
I think so. I think so. Something we've learned as Black women, something I've learned this semester, with many experiences with people, do not overextend yourself.
Oof.
Do not bend backwards for everyone. Your kindness is not deserved by every person.
Amen.
There was a tweet, I think, sent to me, and this was by Chanani, and I think, Kim, you saw it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It says, I want Black women to get comfortable with telling people you're not doing enough for me, and I want more than you are capable or willing to provide. More times than not, people come into our lives and leave with more than what they had, and we're left with nothing. That's dead.
Mm. Yeah, when I saw this tweet, I said, you're speaking.
I had to take a deep breath.
Yeah, because it is so, so true. that so many unfair expectations are put into Black women. And like, I think this goes not only for like, work and academic situations, but literally for interpersonal relationships as well, where people expect so much from you and take so much from you. And you're literally left with nothing because you have given your all to uplift people, to support people. And it's never been 100% reciprocal.
Something I realized with the interpersonal relationships is that I've been sitting and analyzing my role in my relationships. And I've realized that I am a listener a lot of the times. And in my core friendships, I feel like with Kim, with Chanani, with Zoe, like in my core friendships, I feel like I get that back. You know what I mean? And I don't mind being listener because I know that I will be listened to when I need to be. But I've analyzed my role in other relationships where I am listener, but never get that back. And I've been expected to be everyone's healer, everyone's personal therapist. I've been expected to heal people's trauma from childhood. And I think that people see me as someone who's stable or sure of myself and like have a core belief system. I have a good family. I have people I rely on. But it's like, that well I have of stability that ebbs and flows, that well is not for everyone to just take from. That's something I need for myself. And I think I've just been too limitless with who accesses that well of like stability and peace. And I give it too much. And then again, those people leave my life with like mental help. And like, I was a healer, I was a carer, but like, what did I get? I was left with nothing. I was left depleted, and now I have to reset.
That was so well said. And I feel the exact same way. We've talked about this before, but a lot of people, I think, also have that same air of like, we don't have court crazy issues going on in our life, and we're so stable, and like we have everything together. Like, we've talked about this countless times where people have put this, literally like said to us, like, you're so perfect, like there's nothing wrong with you, all this other stuff, and just make all these assumptions about who you are, which then in turn, I think, creates all these expectations of what you can provide for people, and like the space and the energy that you have to give for people, especially people who don't give it back to you. And I think that has been really, it's just been really hard, I think, for me to learn that, like, you don't have to give people everything, especially if they're not doing the same for you. And I think, like, out of the goodness and kindness of my own heart, like, I do like to support people. I do like to uplift people. But it, you don't realize, like, how much it starts to take away from you when it's not reciprocal or people don't respect your kindness in full and start to be exploitative because they know what you're providing and they know what you're doing to support them. So I think it's just definitely been something that we've had to learn and something that I'm so happy that I am really taking to heart and learning now, because it's definitely had an impact on me. It's definitely had an impact on me. And I've walked away from a lot of like friendships and relationships being like, wow, so much was taken from me.
So much was taken. And what did you get? I think also it's like, again, when people project that we're perfect or so put together and stable, it's like, yeah, I'm a well-adjusted person. Like, I grew up with a stable family. I grew up being loved and cared for. So I guess I have a certain baseline of like security in myself. But that doesn't mean I'm not going through stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm still going through stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, my dad died in May. It's what, 6 months? And somehow I'm still supposed to be like, giving people the biggest listening ear and pulling them out of the trenches of their own trauma when I'm still navigating that.
And they have not provided that for you.
At all.
Like when they were, like they were not there through the midst of everything going on. And they are not by any means extending the same kind of support that like you are giving them.
At all. And I just like finally realized, I tweeted this out, but I said, I'm no longer minimizing my feelings for anyone. I'm in awe that I'm still standing after losing my dad. And from now on, I will reserve space for me and prioritize myself instead of prioritizing everyone else as I have for so long.
Just I'm so not, beautifully said.
Thank you. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not going to lose my kindness, because at my core, I know I'm a kind, positive person, but it's just, I'm putting a limit on who receives it. Mm-hmm. I know my heart. You need to prove to me that you deserve to access my heart.
Yeah. And that's not being selfish. That is literally preserving your own peace and
that's
your own
survival.
Happiness. It's survival. It's survival. And yeah, I love what you said. And like, I've definitely also like experienced that, but like to, you know, a lesser extent, but just where like you have done so much to support people and teach people. Bria's laughing because she knows exactly what I'm talking about. But you've done so much to support people, to teach people, to walk people through things they've done wrong. And instead of seeing that as genuine love, as genuine care, you're a bad guy and you're being expected to still walk with those people as they learn things that you should not have to teach them. It's just been so normalized for Black women to pick up everybody's pieces and always be the structure that holds everyone up. And I'm just so sick of that trope. I'm so sick of that narrative. It's literally a narrative and trope like that I think resonates slavery. Back to slavery with the mammy trope and everything. And like, I just feel like that is manifested in so many forms and how people see Black women. And I'm just really so done with that. I'm really so done with that. And it's just sick. It's just really sick. And I think people need to change their framing and their view of Black women.
Yeah.
Because the fact that like you're going to your Black female friends so they can be the ones to walk you through stuff and uplift you and support you consistently.
Why do we like, have to be there for the trauma? Why can't we be there for the lighthearted fun stuff? Why are we there only for the trauma?
Only the trauma. I mean, I used to have friends who would only come to me when they're like down and out. And I'm just like, this is a lot.
It is a lot.
Why am I the one always walking you through stuff? And there has never been a question of, well, how are you? Do you have the capacity?
Because people don't think you need that. People are like, she's good, she's stable, she's perfect.
Yeah.
She doesn't need me to listen to her ever. She's strong enough to shoulder her burdens and mine. That's what people think. And I think my sister is a good example of someone who does not take things from people.
We love you, Brooke.
We love you, Brooke. The Brooke Ash on Twitter,
Go Marcus Stan
account. You probably follow her already. I mean, she got what, 20 something? Okay.
Funny. So funny.
So funny. And something that when I was younger, I just didn't understand. Like, I don't know if I'm wording it correctly, but like, she was always good at having boundaries, is what I'm trying to say. And when I was, you know, I never really had boundaries. So I'd always kind of be like, what? Like, I don't get it. Like, what's the gig here? I don't really understand. But after going through what I've gone through, I just understand how she operates so much more. And I remember when I tweeted out that thing, like, and then we ended up like, we were texting or whatever. And she was like, give them hell. I was like, I will.
I love that.
I will.
And also too, I think like if anyone is reading anything that we're saying in a way that is negative, that is purely,
if they are, I don't care.
I don't care. But I think also too, I just want people to understand that like that is because our society has expected Black women to always carry everybody on their backs. Mm-hmm. I just want to name that.
Yes.
If there's any kind of animosity, if you're looking at us crazy for doing this, it's because Black women have disproportionately been expected to pick up all the broken pieces every single time. And that is not something that has been put on other women, on other people, on Black men. That is just something that has not existed. So I just want to name that.
Please name it. Because
I, like I said, Bri and I are, you know, moving and operating in ways that
we don't have to teach people anymore.
That like that's done. But I also just want to state that if there is any weird reactions to that, I think that is what that's rooted in.
And if you have a weird reaction, chances are you're someone who is mad that people in your life, Black women in your life, are asserting boundaries.
Yeah.
Because you are probably someone who's been taking advantage of them not having boundaries. So if this is striking a chord, if this is making you a little angry, maybe reevaluate your relationships with Black women, because you might be dumping on them like we've been dumped on.
Yup.
Bloop.
Period.
I'm just in a silly, goofy mood today.
Me too. and I think also, too, going off of that, like a direct parallel, like the third lesson that we've learned and we've kind of alluded to already, is just redefining what kindness means. Kindness is not giving every last inch of your energy and time and your soul to people. That's not what kindness is.
Kindness is who you are. And I think that too many people are obsessed with being nice and being perceived as charming and cool and sweet, but they don't have deep kindness behind it. I think that we're people who genuinely, we move because we have kindness. The reason we didn't have boundaries is because at our core, we just enjoy helping people. Mm-hmm. We enjoy talking to people. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think it's that we're not losing that part of ourselves. We're just limiting who receives it.
Yeah.
Because too much of the time, people aren't deserving of that deep listening and caring and handholding because you find out they don't even really like you.
Yeah.
And you find out that they can't give you what you need in return.
I agree. So
we're just limiting who receives it. We're not changing who we are. It's, you know, if you see someone on the street, I pay for someone's lunch and I didn't know them. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
We're not losing those aspects of ourselves.
No.
We're just limiting who receives them in our interpersonal relationships.
Exactly. And I think also, too, I like operated a lot of my life always being super, super attentive and aware of how my actions are impacting other people. Mm-hmm. So much so that I wasn't thinking about how everyone's actions were impacting me. Mm-hmm. And I think like I put myself on the back burner so many times in the name of kindness and like genuinely having love and care for people. And then I think people started to exploit that. And at that same moment, I realized that boundaries need to be set for myself. And then when that shifted, and when that changed, then people saw me as not a nice person anymore, right? Because now I wasn't like bending over backwards just to do what they wanted. So I think that was a really important lesson I had to learn for myself. Like kindness is not giving every single thing you have to somebody.
At the sake of your own sanity. At the sake
of your own well-being, yeah. Because that's not sustainable.
Mm-mm.
It's not sustainable. And also, why should everyone be able to prioritize themselves and do what's best for themselves when you can't?
If every single person was giving the way that we've given, I would keep giving. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, of course.
Like, if everyone was just an overflowing vessel of kindness and joy and listening ear, it would be so easy to just keep doing this with no boundaries. But that's not the reality we live in.
Yeah. And again, like, this is not us saying we're not going to be nice to people. Like, Bria, you know,
no, of course,
explained
of course.
That so well before. It's
of
just
course.
Literally prioritizing yourself and setting this expectation that prioritizing yourself does not mean you're putting other people down.
Mm-hmm. Because it's just that in so many relationships, even when we were going through stuff, we went out of our way to help people out of their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Like they sound an airplane. You put your oxygen mask on before helping other people.
Mm.
You have to save yourself if you want to save other people.
Yeah.
And we were saving everyone except ourselves.
Yeah.
For a long time. And that's just not happening anymore.
No. I mean, this is going back to like middle school, high school.
Elementary school.
Yeah.
My mom literally like had a story the other day when I was talking to her about this. And she was like, literally, she was like, from like preschool, she was like, I saw that trait in you.
Wow.
She was like, I remember like I ended up getting in trouble for something in elementary school because I like my friend like lost her coat or something, let's say. And I like left class to go outside in like the dead of winter to look for her coat on the playground and ended up getting in trouble because I wasn't supposed to be out there.
Mm.
But she was just like, you know, just those traits of like sacrificing yourself.
Yeah.
For other people. And it's like, if I lost my coat, would someone have done that?
Probably not. Yeah. And I remember one time in high school, I was leading an organization and I was literally doing the work. Like I was the leader of the organization, but then I was doing the work of other people who were below me, like literally doing so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the one time I couldn't make it to a meeting or an event or something, you know, I just communicated and expressed that. And I got like chewed out by like the head leader because she was like, "You're not pulling your weight. You're not You're not doing what you're supposed to do." And I was just in shock and devastation because I was like, the other people I work with consistently don't come consistently, don't contribute and give what they need to do. And I'm doing this every single time. And the one day I'm asking for grace and just an excuse, or like an excusal from like the event or whatever, the meeting, whatever it was, I get chewed out. And I think that showed me though that like people will set that expectation that you're always going to give and give and give and give. And then when you pull that back, people see you as mean when in reality you are doing and you are claiming for yourself what everyone else gets.
Yes. Not even the same level. Because if we think about it, people were taking way more than an inch. Mm-hmm. People were taking miles. Yeah. You were taking an inch by just saying, I mean, what club can you not miss one meeting for? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You were. I remember this vividly.
Kim. Like, I put my heart and soul into so much of that, and I did so much. So then,
because you truly loved that club.
Yeah, yeah, I did.
You loved it, and like, I remember just how dedicated you were to it, mm-hmm. and then the fact that other people got off scot-free, and the like, nothing. The one time you're like, oh, I just have to miss this one thing, whatever, whatever. You got chewed out. Also by someone who was supposedly so kind and so nice and so sweet. Okay, lady. That was crazy.
I just could not, like, I was in just such shock because I was like, why does everybody get grace except me when I have been giving so much? And again, this just really
shows you, where does it get you? Where does endless giving get you?
And also too, I just think like when you set this expectation that you're going to give and give and give, and then you try to reclaim agency for yourself, people see that as like a bad thing, but it's mm-hmm. not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. It's like at work, if you are always the first one, I need more work to do, I need more projects, I need this. And then the one minute you're like, oh, I can't do this project, people are going to be mad at you.
Yeah.
Because you set a standard for yourself and an expectation of the work, the amount of work you're going to do. And if you at one point start feeling overwhelmed, people aren't going to like that because you're disrupting the status quo. So just be very careful of the expectations you set for yourself and how other people are supposed to see you. And I think that's something we're redefining.
Mm-hmm. And I think like if you want to be that go-getter and you want to go over the top, that's great. But know when to set your boundaries and stick to that.
Yeah.
And like be confident in that.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, like, when that whole situation unfolded, like, I ended up having a conversation with her and letting her know, like, no, I'm not getting chewed out for this. Like I really had to stand up and
I was so happy when you stood up for yourself.
I just was not going to let that happen. I was like, there's just no way all the work and everything I've put in is going to get minimized or looked down upon when, like, I am doing so much more than, like, what was ever expected of me and literally carrying the weight of so many other people. Like, there's absolutely no way somebody's going to sit here and talk to me as if, like, I'm putting in no effort or I'm not showing up. Like, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. What did she say?
Oh, she took it and we moved on. Great. Honestly, she respected me more after it.
Good.
But I think that also goes to show, like, you know, I think, you know, the right people will respect you for it and, like, move forward from it. And I have more respect for her as well. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to demand respect for yourself.
You do.
Especially as a Black woman, because people will be so quick to try label to take that away from over. You. Yep. To try to humble you, to do all this stuff. So you demand respect for yourself and you stick to that, mm-hmm. You're going to be golden.
You're going to be golden. And also with the boundaries thing, realize some people aren't going to like it.
Yeah.
And but that's just going. What it is.
You just keep moving forward.
I don't know what to tell them. It's we clearly had some stuff to get off our chest today.
Oh, man. I hope that you all enjoyed this video. It felt so good to just...
be candid, open. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like I know in my heart that there are people who need to hear this. Yeah. Whether you're going through what we've gone through, or whether you're someone who may need to hear about how to respect people's boundaries. I just know that there are so many people who could benefit from this. So please, please, please share this episode.
Send it in your group chats.
Whatever. Send it to a Black woman today. Mm-hmm. Send it to a non-Black woman today as well.
Yes.
They might need this more than we do.
Oh my goodness.
So thank funny. You all for listening. This yes. was a great episode.
So incredible. I love you all, and I hope that this all these messages really resonate, and I love you, my Black women.
Love you. We're here for each other.
We're here for each other.
That's what this space is. That's what this podcast is. And that's something we're never, ever going to lose sight of, like, mm-hmm. ever. This space is for us, by us, and it's making it accessible so other people can listen to this if you don't want to have those awkward conversations. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So we love you.
Love you.
Have a great week.
Talk to y'all soon.
Bye.
Bye.